My fiance's family has about half a dozen people who get falling down, shout at the DJ drunk.
Shout at the DJ drunk.
I like that one. At most weddings.
Play Rob Bass. Yes. Play Rob Bass.
You better fucking play Rob Bass. I'm not playing with you, man. Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmar, and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kazmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
Do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so we're really excited to have Evan K. back in the studio. He has been in here with us before, but welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, we're so happy to have you. So tell our listeners a little bit about what you do.
And how you do it.
And how I do it. So I'm an Australian, as you can tell by my accent, living here in New York. I've been 12 years in the US, and I split my time between writing, all sorts of writing, from freelance journalism to working in fashion to fiction, all sorts of those kinds of things. I run a website called The Cud, which we may talk about in a bit, and I also run a skateboard design company called Devil Street Decks.
Wow. I always forgot about that one. Wow. I knew about The Cud, and I remember Devil Street Decks. So tell us first about The Cud.
So The Cud is an online magazine that we started, along with another writer friend of mine, Oliver Pennington, started in Australia 12 years ago this month, actually.
Oliver Pennington sounds like a really fancy name.
Yeah, I love that name. I was just thinking the same thing.
Interestingly enough, not that fancy a guy.
Really? Okay. He's a regular guy. Right,
yeah, but we were both sort of working on different writing projects at the time, but mainly sort of creative ventures. And what we wanted to do was find something that would offer a break for that in terms of writing. So whether it was political stuff or opinion pieces. And we also wanted to work on a forum that might give friends of ours, and then it grew into something more than that, a forum within which to write on anything from arts and entertainment, as I said, onto politics, op-ed stuff. And yeah, it just sort of grew into something where we now feature short fiction, poetry. We have a solid readership, and it's grown each year, and it's proven to be a bit of a start for a lot of young writers as well, which is
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So
that's fantastic.
Is it based mostly in Australia when you're talking about arts and entertainment?
Well, actually, most of the audience for the website is now based in the US.
Okay.
Pretty much it followed me here.
We took it over.
Once I moved here 12 years ago, it just sort of began to be that I guess I was focusing more of my interests on US-based politics and arts and entertainment. But we have contributors from all over the world. We have a couple that are still in Australia, but the bulk are here in the US. So I guess it's probably flowed that way for that reason.
Cool. And so what about the Devil Street Decks?
So Devil Street Decks started.
That's Decks, people. Decks. Don't get excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my accent's with an E. In trouble with that. Oh, that's an interesting venture. Basically, I had always painted when I was younger, and I was always a very keen skater. And living in Maine, something that I started to do just as a hobby was that I was painting and selling a few paintings at local art fairs and things like that.
I did not know you were a painter.
Oh.
Skating I knew about.
International
Man of Mystery up in here.
Yeah. a Renaissance man.
Yeah, a Renaissance man from Australia.
Or Master of None, as my father. Yeah. But in any event, I sold a painting to a young gentleman who was visiting from New York who asked me if I could put it on a skateboard deck. And I told him, sure.
I've Why done not?
That in the past. But when I delivered it to him, I said, this is oil and acrylic, you know, so don't write it.
He immediately wrote it.
Well, yeah, and 3 months later, it was quite surreal. I got an email from a gentleman who had been at a skate park in New York, saw a skateboard that he really liked on the skate park, and he said to me, he asked the guy, where did you get that? Where can I find it? And he said this 16, 18-year-old kid turned to him and said, dude, there's an Aussie who's a writer who lives in Maine and paints decks. I'll put you in touch with him. And this guy just happened to be a collector of skate art. He was a former semi-pro skater. And it just grew from that. Through his community of friends, I sold probably 200-300 boards over the next year.
Wow.
Are you kidding?
That's so crazy.
And now it's grown into being all manufactured boards, but it's myself and 10 other designers.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, I knew that That's you amazing. Had, like, a stable of designers, but I didn't know that you were in there as well. So I have to look on there. Are you using your name?
It's Evan K. Actually, on the website.
So I skipped over that part. Yeah. There's some really cool stuff on there, but these are not operational.
No, these all are now. Yes. They are.
Okay.
What we used to sell was kind of so niche for the people that collect skate art. We have a few that are still on there, but no, for quite a few years now, the bulk is all just manufactured to be ridden boards.
Huh.
And wow.
What we do, which makes it a little bit more interesting, is that unlike most skate companies, we actually profile the artists themselves and the designers who created them. So while we do have a skate team that we promote, we also use the skate company as a way to promote the other art and work in exhibitions that these artists are doing.
So these are artists who are working in other types of medium, and they also work with skateboards.
Absolutely, yep.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's fun. And they're very diverse too. Some of them are working in sort of graphic design, but in, you know, advertising or something like that. So this is an outlet for them. Others are sculptors or printmakers, but this is just something that gives them, again, much in the way maybe that the card offered me a different outlet for writing, this offers them a different outlet for, you know, utilitarian art, I guess.
I guess also, too, it's kind of like, you know, people want to have art, but sometimes getting a painting or purchasing a painting is just not where they want to go, and it's not really affordable.
And the truth is, most of our designs, we only do usually about 50 of a design, so if they want to feel like it's something unique, they can either hang it on the wall or trash it at the skate park.
Do a lot of people hang them up?
Quite a few do, but more the older buyers. Sort of
okay, that's a little more personal, and it's something that has to do with something that they like rather than just a, kind of an image or something, a print to frame and put on a wall to have that incorporated into into something that you are into in your hobby.
Totally, and it can be anything from sort of filling a man cave to being an accent or it can be to that extreme. A lot of the people that buy skate art to hang, to me, are this sort of demographic of 45-plus skaters with lots of broken bones.
So just
The fellow who actually found my skateboard in the park in Brooklyn, when I visited he and his wife in the house there, he had maybe over 600 skateboards hanging in
That's
the house.
That's what I was thinking.
And his bathroom, like the rooms were themed by the art. He had a bathroom of skateboards that were all completely Baroque style.
Wow. That's what I was thinking about because, you know, I grew up with a fair amount of skaters and I can't skate for shit. I was a really terrible Betty. They used to call the skater girls Bettys. I was not. But I just remember how cool, like, if you flip the boards over, there are these really awesome, like, you know, people ripping their faces off and stuff like that on the back of the board. And I was like, oh, that would be really cool to look at it. But then they just get screwed up because you're skating all the time. You know?
Yeah. What do they call the guys? If the girls are called Bettys, the guys are called just skater
dudes. I don't know.
Skater dudes.
And keep in mind, being a skater dude when I was growing up was not cool.
No.
At all. Like, it wasn't like there, and being a Betty was cool. Right. So that was like, if you were a girl and you skated, you were like, cool. If you were a guy and you skated, it was like, come on, dude. Get a bike.
The thing that makes me laugh is that half the reason why I got into sort of skating boards, painting boards when I was a teenager is because in the small town of Bathurst that I grew up in, skating was getting really popular. But it's a town of 30,000 people, and the local council decided that they'd build a skate bowl. But instead went so overboard that they inadvertently built what at the time I believe they said was the biggest skate bowl in the Southern Hemisphere. So in a town of 30,000,
really?
No one could ride it because there were so many.
Oh, it was like
they
high,
having to fill it in because over
high
the next
tech.
2 months.
Not high
it was
tech,
just
but
too
dangerous.
Deep. It was
too deep and dangerous because the level of expertise in the skaters, they couldn't
Can
handle
you imagine
the bowl.
Kids I'm showing
12,
up
14,
like.
So with a broken left wrist, I started painting on the back of a skateboard.
Wow. It's
like
such a cool idea to have a skate park, and that's totally the kind of thing that a council would do, too. Because you just imagine these kids showing up
completely
like.
Completely inaccessible.
Yeah, they're so excited. They get there like, man, we'll die if we do this thing.
It was like a 12-foot drop or something.
Wow. That's interesting.
What about your artwork? Or did you go to school? Did you train and take classes?
I studied a little bit of art early on in high school. My father, as much as I love him, though, did not want me to continue my studies of art. So instead I enjoyed 2 years of commerce, which I got a lot out of.
Oh, yeah. As a writer, I can see how that would have been helpful.
Yeah.
But honestly, most of it was always just a way for me to relax and unwind after a day of work or a day of writing. And it was very lucky that I fell into, in fact, one of the things that I remember being quite embarrassed about was that in my first year in Maine, I had written an article on the CUD, amazed at the fact that I'd been selling art. And so I'd written an article about the 3 rules to scamming artwork. Sales, and that was keep it abstract. That way no one can question your artistic integrity.
True.
The second rule is match colours the way you might say match a tie and your socks to a suit or something. Garish on garish. And the last thing was, if you can afford it, keep to big canvases because people just seem to be more impressed. And a month later, I got a commission for $1,000 for a painting. So I took the article down because I didn't want people to think I was actively scamming them, but it just seemed like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say anything that I'm doing is particularly good. It was just a bit of fun that I managed to find a.
Struck a chord with an audience, and that's all you need. I mean, it doesn't mean you have to hit everybody in the world with it. Right. If there are certain people that like it, then it speaks to them. That's great.
Although I must say, if it's not too much of a diversion, one thing which I only recently discovered, which was related to my painting, and if this is too tangential, we can cut it out. But for many years, since I was a little kid, I used to have this recurring dream. And I still have it to this day. If I am under great stress, I'll maybe have it once, twice a year. I'm usually overtired or fried. And in the dream, as sordid as this sounds, there's always the sound of me. I'm frozen in bed in pitch black, and I hear the sound of gunshots getting louder and louder close to my room.
Okay.
And in my entire life, except for once, I always have woken up just as I see the silhouette of these feet outside the door with the light coming through from the hallway, and I wake up.
Wow.
As a kid, this really disturbed me.
The older I've gotten, the more disturbing it's gotten, now you become used to it.
and the funny thing is, it's always changes location. If I moved rooms in college, it would move. Only once in my life has it gone further than that hallway, and that is that in one of the dreams, I climbed out of the window of this room I was living in my second year in college, run to an adjacent sporting oval and look back, and all I saw was leaning out the window, the black silhouette of a man with a hat on who leans out the window and looked directly towards me. Oh. And then I woke up.
Oh.
Now, I was describing this very story to you, to an ex-girlfriend a few years ago while we were sitting in my apartment here in Hell's Kitchen. And at the end of it, she turned to me and said, "You're fucking with me, right?" And I'm like, "No, what are you talking about?" She said, "Have you seen the paintings on your walls?" And without realizing it, I had painted this silhouette of a man in black with a hat on. There's four paintings in my apartment.
And you hadn't realized it?
I had never clicked. It actually is the silhouette that was the first skateboard I painted. The reason it's called Devil Street is because someone said, "Wow, that silhouette of a man looks like the devil," or something like that.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Fast forward to a month ago, and a friend says, "Wow, I saw this documentary that's really fascinating and really creepy. It's about sleep paralysis. You should really check it out." So I start watching it. And a couple of people start talking about the man in the black hat and how this is a recurring thing in their dreams.
This is something. This is definitely in the This is where we live.
I type this into Google. Type in "man in the black hat sleep," and it's as if I've painted the images that come up on Google. This is an image that people claim they've seen during moments of sleep paralysis. Now, I've only dreamt it. I don't feel like I'm having any sort of sleep paralysis. And there are scientists and psychologists or whatever who describe that it's some sort of perhaps related to not enough oxygen in the imagery that you see in your mind or something.
But why
like that.
A man with a hat? Why a hat?
I don't know. They call them this is so surreal, but they call them the shadow people.
As do we.
And we talk about them all the time.
But that a lot of them see this one person in that with a hat who's considered to be the most powerful and evil of the bunch. And
that's our guy.
You know, anyway, it's a bit of a long
tangent.
No, it's not. No, this
is perfect.
But I always found that really sort of surreal, and it kind of creeped me out a few weeks ago watching this documentary. And I'm going, I'm sure this is all just a coincidence, but gosh, that would be interesting if it ties into this gent that I've been dreaming about since I was.
What was the name of the documentary?
Oh, I'll have to look it up for you. It's on Netflix, though. It was around Halloween. I was asking friends what's new that I haven't seen that needs to freak me out.
They're like, your dream.
Yeah, that's my dream. On Netflix. Right.
That's awesome.
And it's funny how it can permeate your life without thinking about it. It's one of the recurring themes in the novel that I wrote. It starts with the dream that I had just because I thought it made an interesting opener to the story that then followed. So I've written about it, I've painted about it, and I had never made the connection. And weirdly, there's this whole sub-community online that talks about this sleep paralysis-related shadow people or whatever.
The shadow people, yes. The man with the hat.
The man with that tales from Dirt Campfire people right here.
Right.
Wow. I should have prefaced it.
I'm eager to hear from you guys what you know of the shadow people. Give me some clues.
Well, we have talked about them probably more than anything else in our podcast, when we do our segment called Tales from Dirt Campfire, which is where we find tales on the internet of the paranormal. And we tell them here around the digital campfire, gather around.
Yeah, we think this is interesting, and we've learned a lot about the supernatural and ghost stories and all around the world and throughout history. And one of the things is shadow people and the man with the hat. That and comes up for a lot of people, like you were saying.
Do you always hear about it in the context of dreams or sleep?
No, mostly we've heard about it, and you can tell me if I'm wrong about this. It's like out of the corner of your eye.
Yes, or the corner of
your eye. So say you're at the sink doing something,
right?
And then just out of the corner of your eye, like in the just here in the shadows.
A sense of something menacing for them, or not necessarily?
Not necessarily. It could be
sometimes. And again, there are people that are in bed or they're sleeping and they wake up and they see the man in the room.
And then he's gone.
And then he's gone. Sometimes he has red eyes, but they do say he's got this.
Yes.
He's like kind of a 60s, like kind of a private eye kind of look to him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like a coat, a trench, a hat.
I've got to show you these paintings.
You know, he's quite
formal. I want to see these paintings.
Yeah, I want to see these paintings as well. And yeah, that is the they call them shadow people, but we've also talked about shadow cats.
Yeah, there was the shadow animal.
The shadow gerbil at one point.
So it's the idea of is it a ghost? Is it a spirit? Are they human spirits that have passed on?
Is it an impression of something?
Is it from another entity that is not human?
Is it left behind?
What does it mean? Is it a harbinger of what's to come? Yeah. They do messages for you.
Is it materializing, dematerializing?
And I'm sure on the other side of it, there's always some doctor with a certificate behind on the wall saying this is merely a double flick of the retina. Of course,
which is fine, except that why the hat? Stuck on that.
Yeah. There's a thing, there's hypnagogic hallucinations that people have, hypnagogic hallucinations, where you are you are awake, but you have been asleep, you're dreaming, but you wake up and you're still seeing your dreams. So you have this sense, you are actually awake, but the dream is still playing. Yeah. And that can overlay what you are actually seeing.
Right.
And
I think I have read, and it was even mentioned in this documentary, often people feel that they're sort of halfway awake, half awake and half in a dream. It's almost like seeing a test pattern, which I could relate to from some dreams, where you can tell you're sort of coming in and out.
Yeah.
And then you get onto lucid dreaming and all that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. But wow, so the shadow people.
Yeah.
I'm not the only
Here
one.
Here we are.
So this is permanent.
An actual shadow people report.
Yeah.
And hey, you know it. I love it.
Blue.
Cool.
That's awesome.
So let's get on to some segments. So we already did a segment. We just did Tales from Dirk Campfire.
We didn't even know we were going to do it.
We didn't even know it.
Yeah.
What's next?
Okay, this is advice on advice.
All right, so advice on advice is a segment where we find advice on the internet that stinks.
And it's unqualified.
And we try to improve upon it by giving our advice on the advice, hence advice on advice.
That's
so we have Evan here who's going to weigh in on the advice on advice with us.
Yeah.
Talk over us.
This is from a columnist, E. Jean, who we have taken material from before.
B. Jean.
Yes. Okay. So, dear E. Jean, oh God, where do I start? I've been married for 3 years and we have a 2-year-old.
Wow. Fast.
Yeah. We haven't had sex since the baby was born.
And what? In 2 years?
Yeah. I don't love my husband anymore. In fact, I just hate everything about him.
That might be why you're not having sex.
Yeah. You think?
He's overweight. He smokes. We fight all the time. We're like wretched roommates. We don't even kiss anymore.
Okay.
I have asked him for a divorce, but he doesn't want it. What should I do? Help me. The signs, the worst predicament.
I never understand this. First of all, it depends on what state you're in. Because in some states, if one person asks for a divorce, it's over.
Yeah.
I don't know why both people have to agree.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's not working for half of the people.
Yeah. It's going to continue not to work for you.
Yeah.
You don't like it, and you're going to live with it.
Was he fat and was ugly and smoking before, or did you just notice now that you don't like him anymore?
That's
what I mean?
Probably.
Because I don't think people start smoking.
And does the child have a preference of parent?
Yes. how do they feel?
And also, you've had a baby, and your hormones have changed. Your life has changed. You've been completely stressed out. Everything has changed for you. And so, you want to take that into consideration as well.
But it's been 2 years, though. Those hormones need to go back.
Yeah, well, sleep deprivation.
True, yeah.
Okay.
It's a 2-year-old, so.
So here is the advice.
All right.
My burning love. Oh, please. Everybody hates their husbands sometimes. Put the L magazine down. check that the baby is asleep. Go to your man and say, I beg your pardon, darling. Rip the gasper from his lips. In the cigarette.
Okay.
Throw it in the ashtray and kiss him. He'll be shocked.
You'll be disgusted, though.
He'll feel sick.
If you're not a smoker.
Yeah, I know.
Fresh mint in.
Yes. Right. Throw a Ludens in.
He'll feel suddenly afraid. Never mind. Tell him.
This sounds like an assault.
I'm saving the planet. Then kiss him again.
What?
This is the worst Mills and Boone novel ever.
Yeah. I don't give a flying fig if you fight all the time, quote unquote. That's what husbands are for. Something has to hack away at the ice of your marriage, and you are the axe.
Wow.
And tomorrow night, put baby to beddy by. Make a bowl of popcorn with butter. Pop in a movie. Pull that hub down on the couch and make out.
Wow.
Do not talk.
This husband better, better watch out.
Yeah,
this guy's going to be like, where's my wife?
Yeah, and on Sunday, slip in the shower with him. Once you got your sexy back on, you begin to banter. From there, it'll be a step into deep conversation. Whatever you do, stay the hell away from the marriage counselor.
So wait a minute. The last one in the shower, that's going to lead to the discussion?
Yeah.
That's not what that leads to, but okay.
Interesting that she's also suggested assault before marriage counseling.
Yes. Assault. The rip a cigarette out of someone's mouth?
Yeah.
He'll be scared initially.
And just,
don't even mind that he's scared.
Later, he'll be terrified.
Yeah. My problem with this
is he fears for his life, but you just keep going.
Yeah, you just keep going.
That means it's working.
Yeah. No means yes.
Yeah, no means yes. You know, if he protests, put your hand over his mouth or in it. Who cares?
Yeah.
I feel like this advice, it's fun, it's interesting, but to implement it, the first one, I'm sorry, if you try to rip a cigarette out of somebody's mouth, that's probably the end of it. Yeah. What the fuck, bitch?
Oh, you know? Right. You try to take a cigarette from someone.
And then what are you going to do, fling it?
Right. Here, hold the two-year-old.
Yes. So she's suggesting rip it out and then casually stub it out. And then go from there.
Now your fingers smell wonderful as you run into his hair.
Yeah. Why not just show up, throw a glass of water on it?
Yeah.
Be like, why don't we get out of these wet clothes? Go that way.
So all you require is to start remembering why you enjoyed one another in the first place. So go back to the...
But avoid marriage counseling.
Avoid marriage counseling.
But interesting.
Just so just go make out
save
with him.
Money for the bailiff.
Yeah. I would say there's nothing wrong with this advice except that you need to make it clear when you're ripping that guy's cigarette out of his mouth that there's going to be sex.
This is seduction.
Yes. Otherwise, it could be very confusing for someone whose wife has not touched them in 2 years.
Right. Yes.
That the first piece of contact that they have with their wife is when she jumps on him and whips a cigarette out of his mouth.
Yeah.
Like that whatever you're doing next, the HJ, the BJ, better be quick on the draw.
Yeah.
I say one hand on the cigarette, one hand elsewhere. Just so he knows what's going on.
Yeah.
Because they might get freaked out.
Right.
Who is this person?
Yeah.
Have you had a mental schism?
Yeah, he might. That's what I'm saying. Like, the wife is not acting like like the wife normally does. Right. So he might be freaked out and think that maybe she just had a break.
Yeah.
And it's just like, about to beat the shit out of me.
Yeah, or wait till he puts out the cigarette.
Then hop on pop.
And like, thank goodness you just put that out. And jump on.
Yeah. Or put the cigarette in your mouth.
Yeah.
And maybe... get the popcorn earlier? I don't
know. We got to put some of these things together. I think maybe the shower is the first place to go because no one's going to mistake what that is.
Yeah, right.
That's pretty clear if you slip into the shower with someone.
Right.
And what are you bringing in there with you? A cake or something? Another cigarette.
Right. No, slip in the shower.
Did you say cake?
And begin to...
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, make it clear what's going to happen. Only good things are going to happen.
Yeah, she says, once you've got your sexy back, you can begin to banter. From there, it's... but a step into deep conversation.
Yeah. Or that might be it. I mean, they haven't been having sex for 2 years. I imagine there's a lot of frustration and anger on both parts.
Right.
They might not need to have much of a discussion at all.
Yeah.
After this. They might just be able to go. I'm sure this guy's going to be like, whew, thank goodness.
Yeah.
And her too.
Yeah.
And her too.
Oh. 30 seconds of passion. That's worth it.
Yeah. 30 seconds of passion. Doing the commercial break.
Yeah.
I like it. Right. So I have a penis news here, if you will, because we have a man in the house. Oh, penis news. This is when we talk about the member on the move, dick updates, scrotum stories.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. So this one, and I'm glad we have you here because I need to ask about this. This is erotic game goes wrong as wedding ring chokes man's penis. So is another thing in which a guy has put his penis into an inanimate object and can't get it back.
This is a thing where there are a lot of stories about guys who do this. And it's like anything that you can put it in, you can put it in.
Right.
So a rare, it's called penile. Guys will try it, right?
I haven't, but I've heard stories.
Yeah, you've heard stories. So this is a case of penile strangulation. It's called
penile strangulation
emergency, in which a man put a wedding ring on his penis for erotic pleasure. This was described in the latest issue of the SA Medical Journal. A 28-year-old man who was in quote-unquote severe pain, don't put that in quotes, was admitted to a hospital in Limpopo. I don't know where that is, but I'm going to guess it's like, it sounds like it's in Japan, but these things are always in Guangzhou province in China, no matter what.
Always.
His penis was severely swollen and blue and constricted with a wedding ring, which he got around the middle of the penis.
Ugh.
The patient reported that he had applied the ring 4 hours previously for erotic reasons.
Sure.
on the recommendation
for business
of,
reasons. Yes,
on the recommendation of friends. What kind of friends?
No, was he alone? That's something I'd like to know.
It says the hospital date of the incident was not given. I'm imagining he's not up for a lot of talking.
Right.
The hospital staff sedated the man. All right, so they knocked him out and first tried to remove the ring by the string method. What is that?
Oh, the string method. All right, this happens.
Trying to sneak it under this.
What you do if you have a ring stuck on your finger?
Okay.
And there's a video of this.
Of
the string method.
Katie Cass.
So your the ring is stuck and your finger is swollen. So you take a string and you start wrapping it around your finger to compress the to compress the skin and make it tight, almost like an ace
so you can
bandage,
slide it off.
Ace bandage effect. And then you go ahead and kind of slip the ring onto the string. And then as you pull the string, it'll kind of push.
It'll come off.
It'll push the ring off the finger, yeah.
Wow. Okay, so they did that first.
That didn't work.
It was swollen too much. And so then they came in with an oscillating saw.
Ooh.
But the ring was too strong and too wide for that.
Sparks.
And there was limited space due to the swelling.
This is horrible.
They then attempted the aspiration method, and I'm sorry for this, but they had to make small punctures in the penis to release the stored blood.
Oh.
Yes, with a syringe and a pink needle. I don't know why they said it was pink or why it's pink.
Okay.
Okay, and then the penis went down and the ring was removed.
Kind of softens it up a little bit, like saying it's pink instead of just saying the
pink
needle.
Get the pink needle, code pink. The man was then treated with antibiotics and he was given some creams and then discharged after 3 days.
Yeah, he was put out.
Yes. So it says here, according to the SAMJ, a penile strangulation is a rarely described medical emergency. We talk about it all the time. But it occasionally occurs on a worldwide basis. It has been reported in all age groups, but is mostly done for erotic reasons by adults. They keep saying erotic reasons.
Of course it happens all over the world. We're human beings and everybody, kind of impulses.
There's no proper guidelines for the treatment. So like anything that they use to do is to get it off is, kind of experimental in a way. So what is with this?
Well, I mean,
how is it even possible to get a penis into a ring?
I don't know. I mean, there are obviously rings that are sold for sexual.
No, but this was
pleasure.
A wedding ring.
Right.
That's my question.
That I don't know.
It's bizarre.
Did he use soap or peanut butter? Oh, those are reasons, things to get the ring off.
Right.
Like, and what was he, I don't have a penis, but obviously, like, I can see sizes of things. And it's like, isn't it obvious to someone that, like, it's not a good idea to put something as small as a wedding ring? Other rings, I hear what you're talking about. There are things that are specifically made for
this. Yes.
And they are much larger. But we've read stories about, like, this. A guy got his penis stuck in a washer.
Using a wedding ring is the worst way to literally spice up your marriage.
Yes. 100%.
Right.
So bizarre.
It's so weird.
Yeah. Penis. And they couldn't. I mean, they came at it with a saw.
I'm more fascinated by the backstory. I would love to know if the wife was present and wondering if she also thought this was a great idea.
Yeah.
Let's try something different. Or, which would be far more pathetic, did he think this would be a great idea on his own?
Let me try this out first.
See,
I
love you so much, and this is what our commitment means.
Right. I took it off my finger and put it on my penis.
On my penis.
Yeah. How about that?
I'm just a little freaked out by how he got it into a penis and the penis in there, because a wedding ring is very small.
It's a very small
shoehorn, perhaps.
Oh God! There's got to be some way to, and that's our penis news.
All right,
that's bad.
Thank you, Jaquetta.
Yes.
All right.
I can uncross my legs out.
Yeah, I had a worse one that I didn't bring in. I was like, it was too much.
Okay. So I want to talk about Bigfoot.
Okay. Speaking of which, what do we got here, Bigfoot? Big feet. As it were.
Does everybody know about the video that they shot in the 70s where they captured the video?
Yeah, the famous one. Yeah.
The one where he's walking, swinging his arms, and he turns around and looks.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like kind of a Bigfoot catwalk type of situation.
Yeah, so this was fascinating because we know the 70s were huge for Bigfoot. That was
Bigfoot time.
Everyone loved Bigfoot.
Cutoffs, topless Jeeps.
That's right.
And Bigfoot.
Bigfoot,
right. Yeah, he was on the Bionic Man.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
He fought the Bionic Man.
Yeah. Wow. Bigfoot was huge in the U.S. I don't know, in Australia, is Bigfoot a thing?
We call, I believe the local Bigfoot is called a Yowie.
A Yowie.
Oh, okay. Y-O-W-A.
But tell us about it.
The same. I don't really know a lot about it. I believe it might be tied into sort of Native Australian mythology, perhaps. I'm not quite sure.
Okay, so it's an Aboriginal thing.
Indigenous, yes.
Wow.
But I don't know a lot about it. I remember that it was a cartoon character that you'd see as a child. They'd have it on stickers. The Yowie might be watching you or something like that. But he was very friendly and agreeable. Like, you know,
that doesn't sound friendly.
He might be hanging from the tree or something like that and be fuzzy and cuddly. But yeah, that's about all I would know of it. The one question I have for you guys, though, is what is the difference between Yeti and Sasquatch? Is
there the Yeti is in Asia. Up in the mountains.
And it is white.
And it's white. Okay. It's more of a Tibetan thing.
So, excuse me, I should have asked then, Sasquatch and Bigfoot?
They're pretty much the same.
Okay. Yeah. Is it Northwest versus
It's Sasquatch, Midwest? I think, is, or we think it's like a Native American term, Sasquatch. And Bigfoot is just a common...
American.
Yeah, it's just American, the American way to say Sasquatch.
Where I grew up in New Jersey, there's the Ramapo Mountains, and there were tales of the Bigfoot living in the Ramapo Mountains.
Not Sasquatch.
And different people claimed they saw Bigfoot going through the garbage or whatever. Not a bear, but it was Bigfoot.
But it was Bigfoot. Though New Jersey has bears that walk on hind legs.
Yeah.
Right. So yes, recently in the news, sadly.
Petals.
Yes.
Yeah. Petals the bear.
Again? No one shot Petals yet?
Yes.
No, tragically.
Someone shot Petals?
Someone shot Petals.
Why?
And killed Petals.
He came after someone's wife or something like that.
No.
He was getting casual.
No, there was a bigger...
He had a ring on his face.
Yeah, he was wearing...
That's not your wedding ring.
No, there was a loud people to hunt the bear.
Yeah, you guys have bear hunts.
The population. But somebody picked off Petals and everyone was very angry because Petals wasn't in the same class as just the regular bear.
Because he was walking on two legs.
Yes, Petals is a bear. Was a bear. And listeners, you can look at just Petals the bear, Google it, and you'll see the video of this poor bear who had damaged front paws and learned to walk upright.
Poor guy.
And would just walk straight up. And it's amazing to watch.
And it was walking around neighborhoods, though.
Yeah, getting into garbage.
So
But everyone liked Petals.
For now. But eventually, those are the kind of animals that become problems.
Yeah.
Become a little too overfamiliar with the guy. Had Petals over time being mistaken by people for Bigfoot?
Yeah, probably. I'm sure. It's just one of those things. We talked about this. Like, if I saw something like that out of the corner of my eye, I'd be freaked out. Because in my mind, bears do not walk on their hind legs for long.
Especially if they've got, like, fur issues and it doesn't look quite a full
fur. It doesn't look right. Right?
Yeah, it doesn't look right.
Especially if they're wearing a hat.
Yeah.
Right. And a belt. Yeah. And have a ring on their dick. Okay.
I like this article for the perspective here. The man who shot a Bigfoot video that many believe is the most compelling proof of the creature's existence say the experience ruined him.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So Bob.
You should have thought about that.
Yeah. Bob Grimlin shot the controversial footage with Roger Patterson near Bluff Creek in Northern California in the fall of 1967.
Okay.
So that's when that was.
They've taken a couple of hits of acid.
Right.
Yeah. Nearly 50 years later, he tells this magazine that he wishes he never left his home in Oregon to go searching for Bigfoot with Patterson. So this film is called the Patterson Grimlin film.
I love how they give names like that to things in science that no one cares about. Yeah. Right. It's the Casimir Satmari footage of Area 51.
So it depicts a tall, hairy animal, reportedly 7 feet high, walking near a creek, away from two men and briefly glancing over its shoulder to look at them.
Yeah, right. Which we've all seen.
And everyone lost their minds when they saw this.
I remember saying it was like In Search Of.
Yes.
You know?
The film is less than a minute, and it caused years of grief for Grimlin, who felt Patterson edged him out of the three-way deal they shared with Patterson's brother-in-law to exploit the film.
Who was the brother-in-law, the one dressed up?
They're still saying it's Bigfoot.
So they never admitted it.
He's just angry that he didn't get his piece.
DVD rights.
Yeah.
Yes. And Grimlin also had a deal with ridicule from his friends and neighbors in Washington. So everybody's been making fun of him for years.
Bigfoot guy.
Hey, Bigfoot.
Because it's the 70s, so people are rolling up in their vans, rolling down a window, smoke's coming out, and they're yelling, hey, it's a Bigfoot guy.
Woo. I need a new pair of shoes, but I'm having trouble finding them because I have a big foot.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yes.
As he weeps in his living room.
Why?
Yeah, he said they're coming to my driveway at all times of night and go, Bob, we want to go Bigfoot hunting.
See?
That's
Big, also called, as we learned, sasquatching.
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 As a verb, to sasquatch.
It's like leaf peeping.
Yes, leaf peeping.
Yes. Grimland was torn. If he acknowledged he believed in Bigfoot, then he was the town loon, while people assumed if he was lying, if he stayed quiet. So he...
No win.
Yeah. He should have thought about that before he went out there and shot that footage.
Yeah, he says, I can understand why they don't believe in it, because I never did believe in it either. But I saw one. I know what I saw, and I know it wasn't a man in a suit. Couldn't have been.
Why couldn't it have been?
Yeah. And then it says, the legend of Bigfoot continues, although many researchers believe the creature in the film was just a man in an animal suit.
It is just a man in an animal, and it looks like a Wookiee.
Yeah, it does look like a Wookiee.
Like, it looks like someone got, like, a cast off from the back lot.
Yeah, so this has been around, but the film has never been completely debunked.
Yeah, I think it's hard because, you know, if you remember what films were like back then, there's not a lot of enhancement that can happen. It was just, it's like Super 8.
It's Super 8. You know. What you see is kind of what you get.
Yeah, that's it.
And it's just the idea. Is it? There was no altering the film. There was no anything
that you could do. You didn't have to back then.
Yeah.
There were no special, like, this is it.
And I'm sure I've come across things like Unsolved Mysteries or something like that, saying we cannot really rule it out because
it
didn't have the technology.
Famous picture of the shadow that's supposed to be a shadow of Loch Ness Monster that we've all seen, and they tell you all the different ways that they could have done it and blah blah blah, but they can't disprove it from the picture because the picture is so old, and you know,
it literally needs a deathbed confession
needs to have someone come forward. I saw a documentary where they took the footage that we're talking about, the big footage, and they like put nodes on the shoulder and then the picture to show that the gate, you know, was actually a human gate, all these things, but you can't disprove anything.
Yeah. So it still is this the grandpappy of the Bigfoot footage. And let's see. Many imposters have claimed to be the man in the costume, and all of them have been debunked by people who were there. So everybody that said they were the Bigfoot, they're like,
across town.
That's
with
a
me.
Slow day in your life, isn't it? When you decide you're going to come forward as the fake person.
But an even slower day of someone who's out there debunking, like giving people alibis.
Yes.
Or taking their alibis down. Like, nah.
No.
We were at the lake.
He was not.
It's interesting, you know, that of all the sort of monsters and so on that have been made into movies, have we had a Bigfoot movie?
Recently?
Ever? I don't know.
Oh, yes.
Oh, really?
In the 70s. Sasquatch.
Sasquatch.
Oh, well, then I
can't. Everyone who's around our age, which is quite young, I'd like to say.
Yes.
All of us, when we were young, we all saw that movie. It was like 1979 or something like that.
Okay.
It's Sasquatch. And it is, I saw it a couple of years ago. It is terrible.
Held up well.
At the time, it was really scary.
All I remember from it was this shot of the mountains and the trees, and it just panned across all these trees. I'm like, oh, where is he?
It's like Jaws. You're looking at water for 20 minutes, terrified.
Yeah.
That wave looks suspicious.
I'm never going to summer camp again.
Yeah.
He's out there, and this is his land.
Yeah, Bigfoot's
land. And
I'm
just a visitor.
So
I'm at his mercy.
Maybe it's time for another Sasquatch movie.
Yeah.
There's that beef jerky company has... done some success.
Yeah, they use that method with Sasquatch.
Yes.
That kind of thing. So, I think...
It might be time
for a Sasquatch film. Maybe Heike should work on that.
Yes.
You've written some horror movies, is that correct?
Yeah, I've had a crack at a couple.
Well, there you go. It's a freebie for you.
Done.
I don't know how you could make it relevant, though, nowadays. I don't know.
Yeah,
you
hard
have to
make it not humorous for an audience.
Yeah.
Like, to make it serious.
To make it
scary.
Actually scary. So this is another bonus advice.
Oh, bonus advice.
From Carolyn Hacks.
Carolyn Hacks is another columnist that we will...
From the Post that we feature from time to time without her knowing. Dear Carolyn, I have never been a drinker. My mother and two groomsmen, I know, have drinking problems, and I do not like to be around them when they drink. My fiancé's family has about half a dozen people who get falling down, shout at the DJ drunk.
Shout at the DJ drunk.
Like that. At most weddings.
Play Rob Bass. Yes. Play Rob Bass.
You better fucking play Rob Bass. I'm not playing with you, man. The all-time loveliest, happiest, coolest wedding I ever went to had zero alcohol on the premises. I casually mentioned this to the bride and her family. They're probably like, we're all alcoholics. So you have to bring it up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if there's a dry wedding, it's a reason.
Hey, everybody's drinking here.
Yes.
What's going on?
They tried really hard to be civil, but it was a thinly veiled combination of Ice Storm father-in-law and Hurricane mother-in-law. I didn't even explain my reasons before my fiance left the table desperately trying not to cry. So she's trying to say, I want a dry wedding. And everybody else is like, bitch, please. Mm-hmm. I did explain to them in an email after everyone had cooled off for a few days. I am paying for the food and the flowers. My parents generously offered to pay for the ceremony site. The in-laws offered to split the alcohol tab with my parents, with me and me, if we had an open bar. Okay. I strongly prefer zero alcohol. Yeah, we get it. My parents talked me into a conciliatory gesture. How about getting beer and wine?
That's fine.
Although sure. That don't stop me from getting loaded, but yeah. All right.
No.
I still want raw bass. The in-laws to be were really upset that I would consider anything short of an open bar from 4 in the afternoon until 2 in the morning. Can I get into this family? Who are these people?
Sounds like an Australian wedding.
My fiance is miserable and frantic unless everyone else is really happy. I do not want to bring up a point of disagreement unless I have a solid, smooth solution. I am really struggling here. Muddled in Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay.
So the situation is that this guy wants to have a dry wedding, mm-hmm. and nobody else does.
Right.
Because he knows that people at his wedding will get loaded and shout at the DJ.
Well, too bad. Too bad. He can't control everybody, and he can't expect everybody to go to a wedding and give money, their time, mm-hmm. and support.
And not have some drinks with food.
It's a celebration.
It's a celebration.
And if they're dear friends of yours and you're that worried, you could probably have a quiet word in their ear. Could you maybe tone it down a little? And at least you've done that. And if they still start screaming at the DJ, so be it.
Exactly. Because this is the thing. I've had a wedding, and you just have to, like, let it happen. What happens, and you're not, like you said, you're not responsible for Aunt Beatrice.
Right. Yeah.
So
Aunt Beatrice, you know, the problem. That's the problem.
Yeah. Aunt Beatrice. So, muddled in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm flirting with self-parody here, but I'll say it anyway. This is not about alcohol. I don't know why that's flirting with self-parody. It just seems like a really good suggestion. It's not about alcohol, right? It's you're trying to keep everyone from drinking. Your fiance is trying to keep everyone from fighting. However, a dry wedding equals flask smuggling. Yes, it does.
Yes.
It doesn't even have to be a dry wedding for me to smuggle a flask in.
And people just being really unhappy. They just want to cut loose and have fun.
People want
to
get
out of there. They're going to be resentful. They're going to be talking smack about it.
I have to listen to 40 minutes of speeches. I need a drink.
Exactly. Yeah. And keep in mind that a lot of people, when you go to a wedding, you probably as a guest, you may be 10% of the people who are there.
That's
the rest of people you don't know.
It's a social lubricant.
You need that lubricant.
You need that to get people talking to each other.
Yeah.
It really is. It's
And it says, trying to please everybody equals pleasing nobody, assuming responsibility for others' behaviors is carrying the family baggage. Apparently, you both come from households where alcohol got the last word. That's a famously difficult emotional legacy. Even when the drinkers have long since gotten help, which these drinkers, referring to the shouting people, have not. The resources for families are famous, too. She suggests Al-Anon. Less obvious is when we ourselves might benefit from them. So she's suggesting that these people deal with their issues with their family. However, that's not going to happen at the wedding.
No.
Right? That's a long-term
thing. Maybe some Al-Anon flyers at the buffet.
When you get your third drink, you get a free flyer for Al-Anon. Have you thought about not drinking? No. So the family pressure is indeed enough to make your bride miserable and frantic. Then the marriage might be premature.
Wow, going all the way.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, though, because it's like, dude, you don't need to freak out about something like this.
It's a good point in terms of how many times do you hear about people having fundamental problems, and it's related to the reception itself. How are you really going to sort out the ad?
Yeah. I realize my floating this idea might also be premature, but please be open to this. If she lacks a healthy sense of self and boundaries, negotiating marriage might add to the strain, even marriage to someone who really cares about it.
Mm.
It's interesting.
This
is the first hurdle. Mm. This is a tiny hurdle for what's going to be a relationship of a lifetime. I would never have thought about this. As for the wedding itself, you probably know in theory that your fiance, you and your fiance have the last word. So put it into practice, tune out everyone else and figure out together how to meet each other halfway. So screw the other people. Okay. It's actually great practice for all of your decisions as a family, distinct from your parents and hers. Discuss the way that you want things to be and find an agreeable point between your desires, commit to it, and show unwavering support for each other in your decision. I like this advice.
Yeah.
You tell those people to go screw themselves. No one can mess with that.
At 2 a.m. when they're screaming at the DJ.
Yes. So that is the advice. That's not bad.
That was good advice.
Too bad.
I had a friend who told me they were nervous about going to a family wedding because they knew that a person would be there who got so drunk at a wedding that they fell into the pool and chipped their tooth.
Oh.
And to which I say, okay, well, I hope that, I mean, lesson learned. That's like set up and punch right there.
Yeah.
Like, if you get so crazy at a wedding that you make that much of a fool of yourself, you deserve to lose your tooth.
Yeah.
Right.
And fall in the pool.
And feel humiliated.
And feel humiliated.
Yeah.
But the people who are watching you shouldn't feel bad. I don't. I'm one of those people. If someone is doing something uproarious like that, I'm like,
this is a this wedding just got more memorable.
Thank you. Yeah, this wedding just got a lot better. Yeah.
I remember many years ago, a friend who was in a band playing at a wedding told me about the wedding he went to where the bride and the groom got so drunk that he was spinning her around on the dance floor at one point. She fell, knocked her tooth out, and he was so drunk that he stood on a chair and asked his own guests if there was a dentist in the house, not remembering who he had actually invited. And they ended up having to go to the hospital with her tooth wrapped in foil to have it re-implanted.
Are any of the people that we invited to the most...
I know all of you. Were any of you dentists?
Yeah, I go to dentist school. Maybe even hygienist. We can clean the tooth before we take it out. God, he must have some crazy stories.
Oh, gosh, yeah. He had a bunch of great ones. I mean, just all usually typical excess or the typical nightmare person to deal with in terms of the
Rob Bass shouter.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Cool. So if people are looking to find all of the wonderful things that you talk about, like,
we'd love to see those images of the shadow man.
Yeah, the shadow people.
Sure.
Yes, where can they find them?
Well, in terms of my own or
in your apartment.
Yes, in my apartment.
In his dreams.
No, well, I can certainly see some of them at devilstreetdecks.com under my designs. There are a few that I've kept up there that are still there. And also just do some Google research into it. Type in the man in the hat dreams on a Google search and you'll see silhouettes.
And your other site is thecud.com.
Thecud.com. We have a new issue out every month with a couple other features in between. This month is featuring our best of the last 12 years, but next month we'll be back with our usual mix of new material.
Awesome. All right, thanks very much.
Thank you so much for being
here.
It was
so
great.
Thanks for having me here, guys.
Stories, my God.
I'm never going to wear a wedding ring.
Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com with your comments, questions, and segment ideas. Emails will also be read on upcoming shows.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise. And let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at heyyouknowit.com. Thanks. No. I'm thinking of something that's terrifying.
Oh, we need a terrifying one.
Yeah,
okay.
Something that's really just going to scare the fur off of people.
Okay.
You know? I don't know. Maybe Bigfoot needs to have more feet. Like, to increase the horror.
What could he be doing? Vengeance? No.
Vengeance?
Vengeance, right, comes down from the mountain.
Women? Women's always a good thing. He's looking for a mate.
Yeah.
Can't find
looking
one.
For a mate.
Savages a couple bears and then goes from there.
Has developed a taste.
Couple hunters.
Yeah, bears are nervous in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Why? Where are they going? They're all fleeing.
We would have to set it back in the 70s.
Oh, yeah. It would definitely have to be a period piece.
Yeah, yeah.
Most definitely.
You'd definitely see a couple of sort of vengeful hunters being knocked off early.
Yeah. So first bears are disappearing, and then the hunters are angry because they like to shoot bears.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing you know, they find out Sasquatch is doing it.
Didn't Eunice go camping last night on her own?
Yes.
That's a horrible idea.
A group of scientists have to go into the wilderness to find certain plants for their research because there's a disease out there that's killing people.
And the
certain plants only grow in this area, and they only have a limited amount of time to collect the plant.
Okay, sell it to me. I'm listening. Is Sasquatch going to come into this pitch?
Yeah, and then so because it's in the middle of Sasquatch territory,
okay.
And now we have totally disrespected and upset his ecosystem. Sasquatch is out to get the
scientist. It's not just Sasquatch's territory, it's his den.
Yes.
Right. And it's mating season.
Yeah.
And
he's the last of his kind.
He's got a mate.
He's got, yeah.
It starts with him mournfully crying over the loss of his partner.
Yes. He's just looking at his...
at this pile of fur.
At a pile of fur.
He had a good run.
I like it. Sasquatch. A hikey film.
Yes.